Hi, guys. Welcome to Hampton's Consciousness. We are here with Enid and JB, and we are just talking about all the things that happen in the Hamptons that maybe doesn't get all the coverage.
We also want to go over some of our past shows and give you a taste of what's ahead on our show.
Yeah, we're doing a little 2022 recapping our 2021 episodes and talking about our big month in January and our episodes that are coming up.
And Hampton's Consciousness, for those who don't know, is about interviewing people on the East End who are trying to make a positive difference in our world. It's a community that you don't often associate with activism, but underneath the surface, there's a lot of that going on, right?
Yes, I agree. So I think that people think of the Hamptons and they think about the mansions, they think about the parties, they think about all those things, but what they don't sometimes get to realize is that there's just a lot more that's going on. There's a lot of locals that are doing a lot of, you know, beach cleanup, a lot of integrating the community, a lot of social work. There's just a lot of initiatives that probably don't get a lot of press coverage because they might not be as sexy as the other things, but they're probably the most important.
Which reminds me of the interview we did with Jeremy about Mom's House. Why don't you go over that a little bit?
Oh my gosh, yeah. So I run Hampton's Moms, as well as doing this podcast, which integrates a community by uniting mothers with a lot of different resources that are available to them in the different hamlets of the Hamptons. And I do a lot of work for the different, for the Southampton Art Center, for Guild Hall, et cetera. And so Jeremy Dennis came on my radar because I met him at the Guild Hall and he was speaking about the Shinnecock tribe and the Shinnecock Reservation and about his initiatives. He's a local artist and he really blew me away because he was so young and so deep and just really incredible. And he literally transformed his grandmother's house on the Shinnecock Reservation and has created this like artisan residency program that JB and I broadcasted. We podcasted from the outside of the house. Yeah, that was just incredible.
I really like the fact too that it was not primarily, but it was for people of color as well. You know, so the cultural diversity element, again, part of the reason why the Hamptons sometimes is a difficult place to live is what I would say the balkanization between the Native Americans and the whites. There's been a lot of bad blood over the years. And I think part of the reason why we want to do this kind of stuff is to make sure that we can break down those barriers and make sure that we're all just one community and we support each other regardless of whether we believe. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
For example, I wanted to bring this up early, the Hamptons airport issue. Right.
Oh my gosh.
It's really bothering me for a lot of reasons.
Right. So I don't know if you guys know the like background or the backstory of what we're talking about, but the East Hampton Airport is what we're talking about. And they are threatening to close it down, which is bringing a ton of controversy on both sides of the spectrum. Anyways, go on, John.
Yeah, I think the thing that we had talked about this earlier, just separately, that it's really disappointing that people with different views just can't get together and compromise. I mean, I think it's draconian to close an airport, but I also think it's, you know, kind of unfair to have it be, you know, 80,000 helicopters every 2 minutes.
I agree.
So that's what's, again, what seems to be lacking both on the national level and also on the state and local level is just an idea that we need to get together and compromise. We can't always get what we want, right?
Exactly. But if you try sometime,
you just might find. You get what you need. But I mean, I heard some really interesting arguments about this whole airport issue. Like some people said they bought the houses with it very clear in the legal papers that they were in an airport zone and they got a discount on the land. So therefore they're going in there. It's not like they didn't think that there wasn't going to be any
flights.
Listen,
that airport has been there for a long time. So if you were getting a discount on your house on Daniels Hole Road and now you want to cry about it, it's, you know, a little bit too late. Or maybe you rent out your house in August and in July.
Exactly. And I actually lived in the flight plan and it was really sort of on Fridays and Saturdays. You felt like you might have been in Baghdad.
Yes.
Because it was so out of hand. But
it is.
It also was a very short amount of time and the area was still beautiful to live in.
I agree. And then also maybe it's just a function of them limiting, you know, like just so that you don't hear it all the time. You just hear it, you know, 2 hours in the morning and 2 hours, like something like that. I'm sure that there's like some way where everybody can be made somewhat happy.
Exactly. And again, the answer, the whole thing about compromise is you're going to leave the table feeling a little disappointed.
Exactly.
And you're not going to get what you want.
Entirely.
Exactly.
But, you know.
The other thing is that what the issue underscores, which is stating the obvious, is that anytime there's a dispute amongst people, they go right to the lawyers and they can afford it. So there's all this litigation constantly.
Really, the only person that's winning ever are the lawyers.
Exactly.
They're getting paid either way.
Exactly. And they bill by the hour. So,
that's right.
You know, they don't want anything solved anyway because it just means more cash in their pocket, right? That's, I think, what's happening in the Hamptons is not just indigenous to our area. It's a national problem that people just can't seem to sit down and work things out, right?
Yes.
Is that the
I think that's
the right
general,
way to look at it?
Yeah, that's the general consensus.
And
sure.
I'm sometimes wondering why it's this way. But I guess it's also because people are just selfish, maybe? Is that
yeah, and I don't know. I mean, do you think the pandemic had something to do with this? Like,
I think it probably did in the sense that the isolation made selfish people more selfish and made selfless people more selfless. How's that for a statement? I think, I know from my point of view that I've had a lot of nice encounters during the plague.
I agree.
For better or for worse.
I mean, and just to kind of bring it back to people that are selfless, like, let's talk about some of the people that we interviewed last year. We interviewed Erica Serino, which, by the way, if you guys are not listening to her podcast, it's a really good recap of what she does and her new book. I mean, she's just amazing. Like, you interviewed her, John. What did you think about Erica?
I was inspired just by her, you know, her message and her mission. She was very committed to making people aware of the sheer enormity of the plastic crisis. We're drowning in it.
And she's so young.
And she's so committed. And she did, in her book, she travels to the Great Garbage Patch. And the journey is probably, from my point of view, one of the best parts of the book. You know, how they had to rough it. And then I was thinking, which we had discussed on another level too, how here is somebody trying to clean the planet, and they're in this little boat with
losing rudders,
right? Like crapping in a pot,
in a bucket, yeah.
Right, and meanwhile the Exxon Valdez goes by, and it kind of shows you what's really going on. And what really impressed me about her was, and I didn't realize the extent of it, is how the companies that make money off of plastic basically have convinced us that it's recyclable and it's not.
Yeah. I mean, I think the most like alarming data point out of like everything that she's taught me, which has been so much, like between reading her book and hearing her speak a couple different times, 9% of plastic has ever been recycled. Like, just think about the gravity of that. It's just insane. And it's like, it's so discouraging because I'm so obsessed and have taught my three kids to, you know, we separate and we put the recycling out. And to think that you're kind of doing that for all for naught is
right.
Because
they're putting it in the landfill in one giant.
It's just, it's next level. I mean, which doesn't mean that you should stop separating, but it, like, something's got to give.
The other thing, how it relates the plastic crisis to the Hamptons, is because of the development and the fact that the area has become full year round, I've noticed a marked increase in trash everywhere.
Totally.
And the thing is, you ask yourself, like, why can't they just clean the trash? Isn't that the government's like essential function?
For me, it's like so insane because it is such an area of great wealth. And to think that it's like privatized, like you have to pay somebody to pick up your trash in the Hamptons, which is mind blowing. And then after that, like, what's really happening with that trash? Where is it even going? Is it being separated? And even when it's being separated, to know that it's winding up in a landfill is just really shocking to my system because, you know, being on the East End, you're literally at the beach summer, winter, fall, and spring all the time. And then, yeah, back to your point, we're in a global pandemic, which seems to be like, you know, never ending. And this summer, I just remember being at the beach and seeing families just completely not picking up their own garbage, just kind of like picking up whatever. And it's like, okay, like you have a bunch of kids, like you don't have that many hands. Like, I enlist my kids to help me pick up, like to just see people like littering. It just seems insane to me. And I don't know.
The one thing I think, my observation is that these people are just unconscious. And that goes back to what we said about consciousness. We can't change the world, but we can change our behavior and together.
Totally. And if we can
make a difference.
Exactly. If we can make like a few hundred people more conscientious of the way that they're living their lives, then, you know, then we will have done
something good.
Yeah,
exactly. Another guest we had was David Falkowski of
OMO.
Oh my
gosh. So by the way, you guys, I'm like a math nerd. I've been like studying our metrics and stuff. And Dave Falkowski is like somewhat of like a local hero, like a local like legend. It is the most, he was our debut episode and the most downloaded of our podcast episodes thus far is Dave's. Tell them about Dave.
Well, Dave is, when it comes to CBD and
first of all, he has like dreadlocks. He is so cool. He's like the most chill dude ever.
Yep. And his wife works at the store. So it's a mom and pop operation in a classic sense.
Yes.
And the dude is really down when it comes to the medicinal benefits of CBD and CBG oil. He's really an expert.
So he's a legit farmer. They have a farm in Bridgehampton. You know, they grow tomatoes, they grow hemp, they grow like everything. They make their own CBD oils and balms and all sorts of CBD everything. And they sell it at their apothecary. And it's so cool.
And speaking from personal experience, I've been using the CBD oil. And at least for me, it works. It's working wonders, yeah, in terms of pain.
Yeah, you know, same. I have a really bad back, and then I also suffer from anxiety. And I discovered CBD, I want to say like 4 years ago, and it's like it's a game changer. Like, you know, you take some oils before you go to sleep; it really helps you like mellow out and relax. Yeah, interviewing Dave was great.
It was a real and it got to the point where he's so fascinating that it seemed like an hour was 5 minutes because he had so much he had to say. You know?
Yeah.
It was a good episode.
You guys need to...
So check it out.
Yeah, you guys need to listen to the podcast and you need to check out his apothecary in Sag Harbor. It's really cool. You can get like healing crystals there, CBD, incense, just a whole bunch of really cool rad things.
And some cool stories from Dave.
Exactly.
No doubt.
And then if he's there, you're definitely going to want to chill with him because he is very cool.
One thing I wanted to bring up today was that if you, speaking to our audience out there, if you think you have somebody who's making a real difference out in the Hamptons and doing stuff that maybe people don't know about, we'd love to hear from you.
Exactly. It's like, you know, I want to talk about, like, the celebrities are great and, like, you know, the hedge fund managers are, you know, a dime a dozen. But it's like we want to know about, like, the Erica Serenos of the world so that are, like, really making, like, global impact starting super locally or the Jeremy Dennises of the world that are just uniting, you know, not only the Shinnecock Indians with everybody else, but also providing like real cultural opportunities for artists to, you know, come from all over and spend some time on the East End. Just, you know, anybody that's enacting change, whether it's environmental or otherwise, like cultural, it could be anything.
The other guest that we had was Cynthia Daniels that you interviewed.
Oh my gosh.
So please tell our audience a little bit about that.
Yes.
Podcast.
So, I mean, as you might imagine, there are a lot of people that live on the East End have summered there for whatever it is, like 40 years or so. And then at some point people like burn out of New York City life and, you know, turn to their East End homes to kind of like not retire, but just to like chill out and get some perspective. And this is largely like what Cynthia Daniels, who is this amazing, like world renowned sound engineer. And she has this completely insane recording studio in her East Hampton home. It is literally like record label worthy. It is so magnificent. And she, you know, she works with like Paul McCartney and Beyonce and like insane recording artists, like just regularly. She, you know, constantly has like Beyonce just land her jet and come over. And I had the opportunity to sit down with her and pick her brain. And she was just, she was so cool. She calls her studio Monk Music. She feels, you know, she's like that committed and that, you know, in love with what she does and, you know, with carrying out her mission through her sound engineering. And she just told me like the coolest stories about Steve Martin and about all of the celebrities that she's like friends with and that she works with. And she was amazing. I think it's just so cool that there are just so many of these greats, like musical greats that aren't the recording artists. And it's just like, there's so much that goes into releasing an album. And there's so many people that are in charge of all these important tasks that I feel like people don't know about. Like, I didn't even know that that was a job. So I think it's like kind of cool to like inspire like kids that, you know, are looking to figure out what they want to do with the rest of their lives. And there are just all these like really awesome jobs that I had no idea even existed.
One of the things I learned from the interview, which was fascinating, was is that, as you know, with technology, people are recording a lot more at home and allowing creators to do things with the technology that wasn't possible not too long ago. And Cynthia was talking about how that was positive. But at the same time, there was a certain kind of in order to really fulfill music, you probably need to go to take it to a studio, all things being equal. You know, that's what she was kind of saying.
Oh, yeah.
In other words, if you really want to take your music to the next level, it makes more sense to record at home for the beginning, but then in order to finish it and put it out.
Oh yeah, you need like a real producer and sound engineer to like take it to the next level. She actually used to have a record label and she used to like work with artists. She does that like a little bit less now, mm-hmm. But she was talking about that too. Like she had some like local bands that she had signed, which I thought was just really rad.
The other thing I think if you live out at the East End, you know this, is that there is a vibrant musical scene out there.
It's huge.
There's a lot of good bands. And as Cynthia said, they may not be world famous, but they're world famous in terms of talent.
Totally.
I'm thinking of some bands, the Rum Punch Mafia.
Love
my friend
Rum
Steven
Punch
Sylvester,
Mafia.
Who's out there cranking his stuff
they're
all the
really
time.
Really cool.
Really cool. The other one, the Surfcasters, were also a lot in North Sea Tavern.
What about like Kate Ushery?
That
band is really good.
Really cool. And then you got Nancy Atlas, of course.
I mean, she's a legend.
She's
for
a legend
sure.
in the East End. And I had a chance to meet her recently in East Hampton High School. And she said that that it was really the talk house and the relationship with them that put,
I've her. Seen her at the Surf Lodge a bunch of times.
And she also mentioned something that I thought was interesting was that she kind of created that whole thing in Sag Harbor, that music thing that she does annually that was from her at the Bay Street Theater.
Yeah.
So she was telling musicians that oftentimes you can't wait for the phone. You have to go out and kind of pitch things once you get to know people to make things happen. I thought that was pretty cool.
Totally. Yeah, I feel like one really cool thing about the East End is that you get to meet all of these like amazing people that if you met them, I think like in the city or in a different environment, the relationship would just be like totally different. You know, like I think people obviously come to the Hamptons to like chill out and not be like as type A.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, it's really nice to see people like in their like natural habitat, you know,
mm-hmm.
where it's like if you see all these same people like in the city, like the vibe might be completely different.
True enough.
Yeah. So let's talk about some of the people that we have going on upcoming episodes.
Well, we're trying to get the Hampton Psychic, and I think we will eventually.
Yes. So,
Lauren,
a little
psychic.
Bit about me, at least. I'm like just like an old head. Like I'm really into like healing crystals and tarot cards and all that stuff, which might not seem obvious like when you meet me. But I'm really into that. So I'm really excited about talking about all things, you know, tarot and all of that, especially like when it comes to like where the world is going, and like I want to know what she knows about, you know, what the future holds for us. So we definitely are excited about getting our local Hampton psychic on the podcast. I'm interviewing Amanda Fairbanks this week, and JB is reading her book right now, so he can speak to some of what that book entails.
The Lost Boys of Montauk is a fascinating story based, it's a real story of four fishermen who disappeared into the ocean. It's basically a story not only about the tragedy, it was like the perfect storm would be the analogy, but also the trail of sadness and which last reverberates in grief throughout the generations. The one thing about the book that I really enjoyed is having known Montauk as well as I do, the East End is like a real character in the book. You can feel the ocean. You can feel the desolation of Montauk, and I used to do karaoke at Liar's Saloon, so I really got to know a lot of commercial fishermen.
Like for everybody that doesn't really know that much about the Hamptons, like there's the Hamptons and then there's Montauk, and it's like there's real separation, like physical separation, because you have after Amagansett, you have to drive through Napig to get to Montauk. So it's almost like you just hit this like point where like you're driving and there's no, like your phone doesn't work, like nothing works. And then like, and then you get to Montauk and it's like, you're kind of like in this like parallel, like other place. And they still like, are, I guess it's still referred to, like Montauk is often referred to as the drinking town with the fishing problem.
Right. And I think they have no problems when it comes to alcohol out there, as far as what the book also teaches you is they make money when they get the fish, assuming they can, and they have to deal with government, which is also not easy, and the environmental considerations. But it's a hard, tough life, and these primarily men. There are some women who do it, but I mean, it's basically as I think it could probably be, at least she claims in the book, and I don't deny that, it's probably one of the most physically demanding jobs.
Oh yeah.
On the planet.
Yeah.
And when they come ashore, they party hard. There's no doubt about it. And they're very wonderful and sharing, and their community is very close-knit.
Yes.
And I'm thinking about those, the name of the book escapes me, but the guys who almost drowned, but they were saved. There's a famous story about Montauk. I forgot it right now, but I'll try to remember it. But the thing about Montauk is that it's 70% nature preserve.
Yes.
It was created by a guy named Fisher, and it's designed basically to be a playground for the rich, and it was really a middle-class place for a long time until the recent boom, and now it's becoming like the rest of the Hamptons. I mean, there is a division, but...
Ones like Andy Warhol and Ralph Lauren started going out there, kind of.
Exactly. Exactly.
It got bougie, but if any place in the Hamptons is... its most authentic self, I feel like that's Montauk. Like you can still find like a dive bar and talk to a local fisherman.
And get a $2 beer.
Exactly.
I would recommend for people who don't know Montauk to go visit the Walking Dunes, which is an area, a nature preserve, where over the course of a year, the sand mountains actually move. And it looks like a lunar landscape. It's the coolest place you can kind of check out. That's just from my personal experience.
Yes, and there's a lot of seal watching this time of year as well.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, Montauk is amazing. But yeah, we're super excited to talk about The Lost Boys of Montauk with Amanda, who is a Sag Harbor resident, and she has spent a ton of time in Montauk. She spent a lot of time researching this book and talking with the families of, you know, a lot of the family members of these fishermen. They're still out east. And so she had a lot of time to spend with the mothers, wives, sisters, et cetera, to like really get the background.
Ina, do you have an interview scheduled as well with somebody from the Real magazine? Could you talk about that a little bit?
Exactly. So one of my friends and publishing empresario, Amir Karangji, he is talking with us this Thursday, actually. I'm going to his apartment in the city to interview him. He is a Baiting Hollow, which actually my best friend also lives on his street. It's like, for all of you guys that are not like familiar with the East End, there's a North and there's a South Fork, and then there's Riverhead, which is kind of like the mouth where it splits. And there's this enclave in Riverhead called Baiting Hollow, which is like right on the water. It's right on the Sound. It's so beautiful. And Amir actually lives and has, I guess, like a second home in Baiting Hollow. And so does my best friend, Sarah. Hi, Sarah. Hope you're listening. And he publishes The Real Deal, which is known as like the commercial real estate Bible. My ex-husband was like obsessed with him. Like any commercial real estate people read it pretty much religiously to get like all of your news on like the movers and shakers. So it'll be really interesting to get his take on what is happening. I don't know if you guys are aware of the insane boom that the Hamptons has had as everybody kind of mass exodus out of New York City and to their Hampton homes or to buy a Hamptons home. And things just got really crazy. And the Hamptons went from being, you know, a summer habitat to a very, very flourishing year-round community. So we're going to get his take on why he doesn't live on the South Fork, why he prefers the North Fork, and, you know, where he sees, you know, real estate going. You know, is this sustainable?
I would say it is, because it's just a population issue. When I first came to the Hamptons, there was 3 billion people on the planet. Now there's 7 billion.
And they're all in the Hamptons.
And they're all in the Hamptons. And that's why the rents are high. Supply yeah. versus demand.
Speaking of rents, I mean, honestly, there is no place to rent.
That's the whole thing. I mean, it's
there's
become,
no like people are hiring like crazy. Like I run a platform called Hamptons Moms, and a lot of it is connecting people. And there's always people that have jobs open, and they're like, "Oh, can I advertise on your site?" And I'm like, "Yeah, but I'm basically taking your money for no reason, because unless you have a place for them to live, how are they going to live here?" And it's like, that is like the biggest issue I feel, you know, on from a micro perspective, like facing the East End. And everybody's like, "What do you see?" Like, you're at the pulse of like New York and the Hamptons. And I'm like, I see a whole bunch of people that are trying to hire New York City caliber, you know, employees, but they can't live here because they can't afford a $2 million house.
Right.
And there's nowhere to rent. Like
right.
you literally can't rent a place.
Right. Right.
So
show you how crazy it's, you know, we have income inequality in the United States, but in these resort communities, it's even more accentuated, right, and exacerbated. But we have the trade parade now.
Yes.
Where all these people who service these mansions come in. And there's just lines and lines of traffic LA.
So it starts
and
at like
during
5
the summer.
PM.
It's during the summer. What used to take 10 minutes is now a 45
crazy.
Minute thing.
And now everybody knows the back roads. So like we like locals, like we always pride ourselves on by knowing like all the back roads. And now the back roads are on like Waze and Google Maps. So it's like,
yeah, there's no way out.
There's no way out.
And not only that, but there's been a market increase in traffic fatalities and pedestrians getting hit, which was something that you never saw in the 80s and early 90s out there. You
know? Yeah.
And now, and also not to denigrate people who are into exercise, but we have thousands of bikes on the roads and during the summer.
Scary.
I mean, it's just basically like Central Park on steroids out there, right? That's how I describe it.
Yes.
South Fork.
Yeah. I mean, the North Fork kind of too. I mean, it's such a boom out here that it is just on the next level. But yeah, I mean, so it'll be interesting to hear like a real like real estate professional where like this mm-hmm. is what they like live and breathe to get like their true take, as also somebody that like comes out here, you know, their take on like where's this going?
Right. My wife's in real estate and she said that her biggest problem is inventory. And when they have something that comes on the market, it
sells basically before it even goes on
exactly.
the market.
If people like it online, they're ready to write the check.
So, sight unseen a lot of times.
Exactly. And by the way, another corollary of all of this is that they're building now on lots that they would never build before, like right on the highway.
Literally.
You know, you got like 14 rooms and you're looking at trucks all day.
Yes.
You know, 4 million. And you got to ask yourself, is it really worth it? But I don't know. You know, I guess to somebody it is, right? But it just makes, you know, you could go to Europe like 400 times, man. You know, you can go to Hawaii and get something for two.
Yeah, exactly.
which is just crazy. It's just, they all want to be where their friends are. And, you know, that's how it works, right? Everybody wants to be with
the
people.
Join the club mentality.
Exactly. So.
It is
And you probably know more about that than I do being a hermit on Shelter Island.
Yeah. Yes. I definitely know. Yeah. Definitely know all about that join the club mentality. But yeah, I mean, it's fascinating. Mm-hmm. It's definitely fascinating. So we have Amir coming up. We have Amanda. It is the month of A's. So if you know anybody else exemplary and their name happens to
start with
A.
We can do a B guest if you want.
I guess.
B-lister.
I guess.
There you have it. But listen, another thing we wanted to do today is not only introduce ourselves, our podcast, and the future, is to just kind of talk about some things that we thought were funny. And I want to lead into Enid's take on a new film on Netflix.
Oh, my gosh.
What's it called again? It seems so forgettable. But what's
look I literally up? Forgot about it. I have PTSD.
That's quite all right. We all do at some level.
Seriously, what is it called? Don't look up.
Don't look up. I think it's called Don't Look Up, right? We were talking about this the other day.
It's called Don't Look Up. And we were talking about it between Christmas and New Year's. And, you know, we had that vacation week and everybody is intaking media and catching up on things. And I was telling John that I was going to watch Don't Look Up. And then he asked me how it was. And I mean, I know that a lot of people are really into satires and generally so am I, but this was just, it was too much for me. So I couldn't wait to look down and away and control alt delete from the whole thing. It was Leonardo DiCaprio, which I love, and Jennifer Lawrence, who I love.
But what did you say about her look?
They're scientists.
She's beautiful. So now because she's a scientist, she has to be ugly.
Exactly.
Right?
So this was so ridiculous. It just was so, everything was just crazy. So they make Leonardo DiCaprio somehow look nerdier. They throw glasses on him. Fine. And then they take Jennifer Lawrence and they give her manic panic red hair from the 90s. She basically was my ninth grade self. She had purple, red, manic panic, dyed hair and this ridiculous hoop in her nose. And this is how they make her look less attractive because she's a scientist. God forbid you're smart and pretty.
At the same time.
The world cannot handle that.
No, that's just...
You pick one and that's all you get.
That's right.
Sorry.
Hollywood says you can't have both.
Yes. Hollywood says that you're either one or the other. So we cannot have you portraying a scientist.
Well, in your case, it's beauty and in my case, it ain't. So there you have
it. Right. I can't be smart.
But what is the plot of this alleged Netflix
hit? Trying to explain that there's a comet hitting the world and that we are going to perish and nobody will believe them because we're just so messed up as a society. So exactly, what even is the point? So they go on the news and Leonardo DiCaprio starts hooking up with the newscaster. Oh my gosh, yeah, the whole thing was just so ridiculous. But I mean, the whole point is that, you know, we should be focused on climate change. And I would love to get Erica's take on this ridiculous film.
Oh, I'm sure she would not appreciate it. Right. But the climate crisis is really tied
climate
to
crisis
the
is really
it's tied
real.
To the plastics crisis. These are all interrelated crises. It's called massive environmental degradation. And I've said to you time and time again, one of the things that really stunning about COVID is that there really isn't a serious discussion about how we can change things to stop this generational catastrophe, right? I mean, they're still talking about Build Back Better and they can't seem to get it. I mean, it's frightening.
Yeah. You think? I mean, exactly. I don't know.
The place is burnt. It's like your house is burning and you're like, okay, let's, but in that sense, I guess the film is
let's
right.
Let's mow the lawn. There's so much crazy stuff happening. And I feel my takeaway from the fact that only 9% of plastic has ever been recycled is that I don't subscribe to single use plastic. I don't buy bottled water or sparkling water. I use a soda stream, even though I don't love the soda stream. It beats, buying it. I reuse glass and I reuse things. And I also don't. I remember once my oldest son was basically calling me out because he's you talk about being so environmentally aware and recycling and you compost and all of this. And then he counted how many pairs of jeans I had in my closet. And he was like, you only have two legs. Why do you have 26 pairs of jeans? And I was like, okay. And then he researched that every pair of jeans is 10,000 gallons of water. or whatever. So for every pair of jeans that are made, right? And then he figured out like how many pairs of jeans are made in this country or whatever, China, to like import to this country every day. It was like alarming. And so he inspired me a couple years back to not shop for one whole year. So it's like,
cool.
I do things all the time to like reduce my own carbon footprint. But I mean, there's obviously things that you can do, but it's like, it's really disheartening to be like on the beach in Montauk and just see people just leave their trash right there on like one of the nicest beaches in the world.
Right. Globally ranked. And they're still throwing their shit out.
It's insane.
It's crazy. Another thing that we talked about was in terms of the Hamptons was the future of the Hamptons. And one of the issues we talked about is housing. And now they're talking about affordable housing.
Yes.
Which is really kind of crazy because the developers destroyed the area on one level. And now they're asking for more destruction to bring more people into an area that can't handle the people that it already has. And I'm not against people living there or affordable housing, but the cat's out of the barn or the horse's out of the barn, because years ago, they could have planned like they did with land acquisition
to have
affordable housing as part of planning for the future. There was never any planning. It was the Wild West.
Yeah.
Just like Florida, the developers came in and now they want to develop more for the people that they shut out. So it's, and then the people that are there are like, do we really want even more traffic, you know, at this juncture? Because they're talking about these projects. And again, it's a real hard thing to understand, because I want people to be able to live there. So what do you do, right, at this point? I mean, I think it's already like over, you know. And then you have the argument too. Look, I want to live on Fifth Avenue. You know, I do. I just want, can you make that happen for me? I mean, you know, everybody wants to live in certain areas. Yeah, I want to, you know, I'm going to move out to Beverly Hills. Can you give me a nice little cottage out there? Like who determines who gets this shit too? You know, they have these lotteries for affordable housing.
Oh, yeah.
It's like 1,000 people and then 2 people get it. And it's like,
yeah,
wow.
Honestly, know? Like, forget like even that. Like, I mean, they're just
play the scratch card, dude, you know?
Yeah. I mean, there needs to be affordable housing just because like it's not sustainable what's happening right now. Like, not even for families, like for just employees.
Right. But the thing is, I'm saying that because it's so overdeveloped for a certain class, it may be impossible to really solve it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, sort of. I mean,
you know,
I
you're gonna be able to make progress, but then again, it's a double-edged sword. So then you, like I said, you have this high-density projects in an area that's already has too many people.
Right. So. I mean, I don't know. Like, that's why I'd be interested to like talk to Amir about it, because there are so many like condos and so many like different things. Like, if a commercial real estate developer like really wanted to, because they own land out there anyways, they could easily turn it into something, you know, that would make everybody money and solve some
of the issues. Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, it goes back to what we talked about, like getting everybody together and trying to figure it out. But I will say that most people who want to live out there of modest means will never be able to. I guess that's a safe statement to make.
Yeah.
There's no way. We can't turn back the clock. So, anything else on your mind today?
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's really it. I would love for, you know, our listeners, like, definitely inspire us. Let us know who should be on our radar. Like, who should we be talking about? Like, who is doing something that perhaps, you know, nobody's talking about, nobody is writing about, somebody that's really moving the needle for change, for good. That's who we want to talk to.
Absolutely. So again, we're Hamptons Consciousness, JB and Needed. We're ready to rock and roll in 2022 with more programming. And we want to thank all of our listeners and the future ones as well.
Yes. And come see JB if you want to do some karaoke at Murph's on Thursday night.
There's only one show left. And there was only 3 people last week, so.
So you could be the 4th.
Cool. Nice to see you guys. Thank you.
Bye, guys. Thank you for tuning in. It's Hamptons Consciousness.